All right, a little bit of odd music here on All Marine Radio. You don't hear it very often, but that's the Olympic fanfare. And joining us, I've known her since she was 7 or 8, and this has been probably a dream that I thought, like, and I remember talking to her dad about it, that, hey, Pierre, do you know, someday your daughters are going to be on the U.S. women's hockey team. And he said to me, I don't know about that, was when they went away to high school and they were among the elite athletes as women playing hockey. I've never seen anybody on the ice better than Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux. And joining us today, first time I've ever said this in public, is Olympic gold medalist, U.S. women's ice hockey team in the 2018 Olympics, Jocelyn Lamoureux. And Jocelyn, that must never get old hearing, huh?
No, it definitely doesn't. Thanks for having me.
What's it like to be a gold medal winner?
It's been amazing to be able to share the experience with so many people. It's been a different life. After Vancouver and Sochi, you just kind of go back to life as normal, life as usual. And the last 6 to 8 weeks has been anything but normal for our team and for Monique and I. We've been traveling almost every week since we've been back from South Korea, but it's been great opportunities to meet so many people and share a medal with everyone. And so it's been a pretty cool experience so far.
Pretty cool. I would think that, yeah, that sounds about right. It looks pretty cool. So when you guys talk to us about what you've been doing since the Olympics. You come home, and I've seen you on multiple. I saw you at the Staples Center. The place went crazy. You guys are up in the VIP suites and all that. First of all, you putting on any weight? You have to, huh?
You get into like day 5 and 6 where it's just kind of we had some McDonald's, had a couple late nights, and then you just start physically just to feel it, and so you start just do what you can to try and maintain, and just get in a few sweats here and there. But we've been pretty good about trying to get in the gym still and just doing some just normal people workouts.
All right. Does it amaze you the reaction that you get? I watching at the Staples Center, I was watching my Kings, who are down 3-0 to the goddamn Las Vegas, to an expansion team.
Yeah.
What a joke. Anyway, I'm just turned on to watch your game, and I didn't see the announcement prior to, and then they're doing this ceremony, but the place went crazy when you guys came out. What's that like?
The LA one, that was pretty special because that was our first kind of homecoming. And I guess the best thing about doing all those events is you obviously have your hockey fans and you have young girls who look up to you and young boys who watch the game, people who called in sick the next day because they were up late watching the game, but just you have your sports fans and then just proud Americans who were just proud that the USA brought home to kind of experience that in its totality of just proud Americans sharing their experience watching the game and how it just kind of brought the country together for a moment is something special when people share that.
All right. Of all the places that you've been so far, is there any one of them that jumps out at you as being more unique or more special or hit you in a certain way?
Well, I think every event we've gone to is unique in its own way. But actually, when we were at the LA game, there was a set of twins. They couldn't have been more than 6 years old. They were in their gear because they must have been doing the intermission game.
Right.
And we weren't allowed, like, you have security kind of ushering you through the arena. And their mom was like, do I have twins? Can you take a picture? So we grabbed a picture with a set of twins. And Monique and I are looking at the camera. And then the two little girls are just looking straight up at us. And so that was pretty cool. We went to the Stadium Series game that was in Annapolis. And that was pretty unique, a really cool experience with all the cadets out there, and just a really pro-American crowd, which is pretty sick. And then, I don't know, just everything's been pretty amazing. We're in New York City for a while, been in Philly, and just the whole experience and how everyone's just kind of embraced our team and shared their stories watching the game is pretty cool.
All right, so joining us is Olympic gold medalist Jocelyn Lamoureux. Kind of back things up. It reminds me of a conversation that I had with your dad when I said that to him, and he just kind of, your dad, very, very humble guy and a tough guy, and you know, and I'm sure it had gone through his mind because you know, where we played and having coached Jocelyn and Monique, they were not only the best girls around. I never saw a better female hockey player than I've seen in Monique and Jocelyn, but they were some of the better players on the team. I don't know if we had better players on the team, and it was the most talented young team I'd ever seen in my life, the way they passed the puck and moved. And Monique and Jocelyn took a backseat to none of the boys that played on that team. When did it first occur to you that you guys someday might be able to play in the Olympics?
I think, you know, we had dreamed about playing in the Olympics since we had first watched in 98. And so I guess we were then like squirts when that happened. And right. It was always a part of our dream. And I think as you grow up, you don't, like, on a day to day, you're not thinking, I wonder if I'm good enough. I wonder if I'm good enough. But when we started going to girls tournaments periodically when we were in Pee Wee, so like 12, 13, we'd show up to these girls tournaments and we would do really well. We wouldn't know anyone. We'd show up, play on the team, and do really, really well against players that were 4 or 5 years older than us. We played in a 19U tournament when we were like 12 or 13.
So explain everybody. You spent the year playing against boys, right? When you were a mite, when you were a squirt, when you were a peewee, and then in the summer, right. Your dad would take you down to the Twin Cities and you'd play in, because they'd have big AAA hockey, girls hockey tournaments there during the winter, during the summer, right?
Right, it would be like spring, summertime, and there would just be a periodic AAA team that we would only play in like 2 tournaments a year, but it like kind of got our foot in the door with girls hockey, and then we went to, it would have been the National Development Camp tryouts, and the districts are different now, but it was Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and so you have all the Minnesota players who they've done a great job developing women's hockey and girls hockey, and we were the only two from North Dakota or South Dakota that would make it in our age. And there might have been one other player that ever had made it out of the district. And we would show up and it was kind of like, who are these girls from North Dakota? And we went to a national camp when we were 14, so right after our Bantam year, and did pretty well. And I think once you get a taste of that, you kind of see where you stack up. And I actually, my first tournament, I was on a team with Hillary Knight, and so we're the three that made it out of our age group that have been on the national team for quite some time. And I think once you kind of get that taste and you see where you stack up against other girls players, when we were like 12, 13, we kind of just, I don't want to say we had no doubt, but we just had this belief that we were gonna get our turn, and when we did and had an opportunity, we were gonna make the most of it.
Talk to us. I want to kind of switch gears now. You guys struggled against the Canadian team, and as much as everybody tries to say don't look ahead, and the Finns have made strides, and the Germans have made strides, and everybody's made strides in women's hockey, I think everybody who follows the sport knows that ultimately it's going to come down, unless something catastrophic happens, it's ultimately going to come down to the United States versus Canada. You guys had struggled against them in your preseason. And in the interview we did in January, you said, well, you know, last time when we lost to them, we had our way the whole preseason, pre-Olympic tournaments and those games. So maybe it'll be something different. Talk to us about the series. Talk to us about your mindset going into the Olympics. How did you guys ultimately try to make sense of it as going into the Olympic Games?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can't read too much into it, because when you get in the one and done game deals, you're not playing in a series, anything can happen. I mean, you can have a goalie stand on their head for a game. And so you have to say the right things, and you're definitely not looking past any teams. But Finland is a perfect example where if you don't get up early on them, they're tough. And so the first game against Finland, we were actually down. Monique's the one who tied it up, and that was questionably the second biggest goal of the tournament, was when she tied it up, because we were out shooting them by like 20 or 30 shots at that point, hadn't scored, and we only ended up winning 3-1 with an empty netter. So you definitely have to be ready to go from the start against a team like that, because if they get comfortable and their goalie starts being pucks and they're stopping everything, it's going to be a long game. And it's really easy to get frustrated in those situations. But as far as the pre-Olympic tour against Canada, I mean, they had their way with us we won the first game pretty handily, and then we won Four Nations, and then after that we hadn't won a single game against them. They swept us, and Monique and I, we had sat for a couple of those games. We were healthy scratched, and so when you get into situations like that and you get back into the lineup, you just want to make the most of every opportunity you get to play. But I think the first prelim game against them, we played really well. I thought we played better in that game than we did in the gold medal game, to be honest. But they found a way to win, even though we had outshot them almost 2-1. And so you get in those situations where you know that you need to get pucks to the net, you need to get bodies to the net, and you just need to do whatever you can to get the puck in the net, no matter what it takes. And so when it came down to the gold medal game, it's just every opportunity you have to get to the puck to the net, you got to do it from wherever, and you got to get, you know, bodies in front and find a way to put the puck in the net.
So going into the tournament, did were you guys confident you could beat them, or your games are always close with them. Is it simple as every game's a new game, and what has gone on prior to this doesn't matter to us? We're also playing on Olympic ice relative to NHL ice. So the mindset going in was the same and as it was in previous years, because you have a lot of experienced players on that team, yes? Or was it not?
Yeah, we had a lot of experienced players. We also had a lot of first-time Olympians, and I think that helped a lot.
How?
I think they had – so our younger players have never lost to Canada in a major tournament ever. So, like, from a U18 Whoa. Level to a U22 level to a World Championship senior team level, they've never lost. And so – even though we got swept in November, December against them in the tour games, there's still just a mindset that our younger players have that they're just going to find a way to win, which they have done at every level. And I think that brings a sense of calmness to the locker room and a sense of quiet confidence. And I think really calms the older players down early. You know, you see the younger players just kind of going about their business and not being too nervous or too tense. It really is like, okay, they're feeling good. I'm confident that we're gonna play well today, and people aren't gonna be too nervous. But I think the mindset, Monique and I got put on a line together a month before the Olympics. And we had played about 5 games where we weren't scoring a ton, but we were creating so many opportunities, and we were just a little snake bit. And Monique and I had the mindset for our line anyways that we're playing really well right now. We're getting so many pucks to the net. We're getting grade A opportunities that we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to stick with it, and it's going to happen when it matters. And we got into that first game, and it was, you know, a cross-ice dump, created a turnover, and Monique just took it to the hole and just got a greasy goal just on the third rebound. And that kind of, I think, just kicked off our tournament. We were going to find a way to be a difference for our team and bring energy and bring momentum. And I think that confidence within ourselves and our line was really what carried me through the tournament and really helped, I think, get our other lines going.
What the guys covering the games like your style of play? You guys tend to be strap it on, especially against the Canadians, which are your favorites. But talk about how what you know works when you play, because truth be told, you know, let's talk about the Finns. The Finns' secret is their goaltender, yes. And you know her.
Right.
You're familiar with her, yes?
Yep, she played for the Gophers, so, yeah.
So you're familiar with her. And she can, you know, hockey's one of those sports, like baseball, that the pitcher or the goaltender, if they stand on their head, it's done. And so you know that going in. How do you win against teams like that? Because there are teams in that tournament that you could simply outskill.
Absolutely. I think you... if you look, so our second game against Finland in the semis, Gigi Marvin scored on their first shift, like 3 minutes into the game. And that game just opened up. We got another one 5 minutes later. I think we went into the second period up 3-0. And so that was, if you're able to get up early and get pucks to the net and get one in the first 10 minutes, it totally changes the dynamic of the game. When a team like that has to play from behind, they have to open up a lot in the neutral zone, which creates more offensive space for everybody. And when you don't score early and you kind of let them hang on, and then if they score first, then they just lock it down, and they're going to try and hang on to that one goal lead, and they're going to block everything, and they're going to just have five people in front of their net when we're in the offensive zone. And so you definitely have to be aware of that game dynamic. And if you can't score early or don't get one early, you really have to be, you know, make smart decisions, make safe decisions defensively. You can't cheat offensively, because that's when there's a turnover and they turn it back and score. But I think as far as the way Monique and I play, if a team is going to trap, so Finland and Canada, they both like to trap in the neutral. The mm-hmm. best way to beat a trap is a quick transition. So get the puck right back up the ice and get it right back down their throat. And that's how you get, you know, defensemen having to transition forward to backward to forward. And you get forwards trying to get set in the trap and they can't get in position. And so really every time Monique and I were on the ice, we were just, everybody knew we want to get the puck up ice. And if we had to cross ice dump it and make a smart dump to get their D to turn and skate, that's really how you're going to break a trap. And no defenseman likes being chased down by a forward trying to make a play with a puck in the defensive zone.
I want to kind of switch gears before we talk about the gold medal game. What was the whole atmosphere like? I mean, the backdrop of this Olympics, a little bit different, is like, the North Koreans are going to nuke the United States, but we're going to nuke them first before they can do it. So your preparations, your family's going over there, your husband's going over there, your sister's husband evidently surprises her and gets over there for the gold medal game. What was all that like? Was there a ton of security? Was there not as much as you thought? And what did you get told about everything that was going to happen in Korea?
So you're aware of like what's going on as far as the political agendas before we're heading over there, but really, like, there's no one who's, you know, we're going. So I think you just try and, you know, block that stuff out as much as you can and not let it be a distraction or a fear when you're going over there. I think more of the harder part is knowing that if there is an incident that happens, there's a plan for the U.S. athletes to get out. There's the safety plan, and there's military over there and security over there and Secret Service. But for the families, there isn't, you know, a quick plan to safety. And so I think that's more of a stress for a lot of us. But when we got over there, it was a great atmosphere. There wasn't any instance where you felt like it was unsafe or what the heck's going on over here. It was truly just a great experience. South Korea was thrilled to be hosting. They were a great host. Everyone was very welcoming, and we had the North Korean athletes that were there. You could kind of pass them in the village, and they would have extra security with them. But there was a lot of attention around that. But it was really just it was a great experience, and I would say that in Sochi there was more, at least noticeable or visible security and military around. Mm-hmm. Korea was way more low key. You didn't really know who was carrying what or who was official security or military. There wasn't really as big of a presence, or it didn't feel like it was as big of a presence in South Korea.
All right, let's talk about the game. What going into the game, you guys had, again, you had lost to them. They'd had their way, and before going to the tournament, they found a way to, and I thought you guys played well, more than well enough to win in the first game, but they came back and won. Talk about the mindset. Now you're going to go play for an Olympic, one and out for an Olympic gold medal. What was the mindset on your team going into the final game?
I think we all felt really confident. We played really well against Finland. And I mean, you get in, like I said, you get into these one and done deals and you just need things to go right one time. And I remember being with Monique, and Monique probably in my career, if any player that I've played with, has scored more clutch goals and overtime situations and one goal situations than any teammate I've ever played with. And she had been getting chances the entire tournament. She, you know, had a few big goals, but had gotten tripped up on a few, drawn penalties. And I told Monique before we went, I go, you've scored more goals in clutch situations than anyone I know. Like, I don't know if I've ever scored an overtime goal. I think Monique has four than I can remember off the top of my head. And I just think, you know, Monique and I specifically, we just had a belief in our line that we were going to find a way to be a difference maker in whatever opportunities we were given as far as ice time and shift lengths go. And we just were, there was going to be no way that we were going to be denied. We were going to run through a brick wall if we had to. But then our younger players, they were calm. They were having fun, just sticking to their routine, before the game. And our older players, we just had this, we will not be denied attitude. And even when we were down going into the third period, it was calm in the locker room. It wasn't quiet, like, holy shit, what's going to happen? Sorry, I just swore.
No, this is all Marin Radio. We don't even consider shit a swear word.
Okay. But it was a calm confidence that, you know, we were going to plug away. We were going to do what we needed to do and find a way to tie it up. And the first two periods, we really hadn't played that great. But the third period, we played pretty well, and we had been pressing and getting good chances, and then, you know, Monique gets one, 6-7 minutes left. And it was just from that point on, it was just a, no matter what, we knew we were going to find a way. But
well, let's talk about that play. Cause Jocelyn and I were talking before we came on, and I had played, that interview that we did, in January. I played that, I don't know if it was during the Olympics or right after. And as I'm listening to it, you know, Monique is talking about your team speed, the wider Olympic ice, and the opportunities if somebody is over aggressive on a forecheck, and the combination of that, maybe and not a great line change as the puck doesn't get in as deep as it should. Talk about that play as you guys gain possession in your own zone, and then your sister's shot's pretty wicked too. So talk about that play and kind of how those factors play into you guys tying the game up.
Yeah, so we actually we our lines had a shift mostly in the offensive zone, and we actually we had a, I don't know if it was a bad turnover or a bad pinch, but they went in on a 2-on-1, and I don't know if Maddie got a piece of it, but it went wide, so it just rung right around the boards, and I pinched somebody off, and then Kelly Panic makes a play across ice, and they got caught between a bad change and their D. Their far side idea kind of sucked to the middle, which gave Monique so much more room.
Right.
And she walked in uncontested. And I mean, if you shrink that ice back to NHL ice, that's 10 less feet to work with as far as width goes. So that back checker might have been able to catch Monique from the bench if you're thinking 10 feet and where Monique was when she shot and how far away the next person was. So it definitely plays a factor in spacing on where D are. But yeah, Monique walks in, and I think having a good backhand is such an underrated skill. And Monique and I, we've worked with Pierre Paul and Coach Jackson at UND on backhand club work. And Monique catches just a fired pass on her backhand, catches it clean, and just walks in uncontested for a breakaway. But yeah, I think, you know, to be in a situation like that, and, you know, she scores like that low far side, low glove side, blocker side, five hole. Like, she picks her corners all the time in a situation like that. And to be in a pressure situation like that in the biggest moment of your hockey career and to just execute, just, I think, just shows the mental toughness and mental preparation that she's put in or that we've put in. And just, you know, no matter what opportunities we were given, we were going to make the most of everyone.
How many years? So that shot is what, 20 years in the making? When people ask, like, what makes an Olympic athlete, that's like, that shot is like 20 years of work, that play to tie that game up. Amazing when you think about it, all the work that you guys have put in. And let me just tell you, I could tell you, you know, Monique Jocelyn, in addition to being incredibly talented athletes, by virtue of the way they were raised by Pierre and Linda, they are the hardest working athletes that you'll see on the ice. And it's an incredible combination. And you see it all come together. And there's not it's not an accident. It's not an accident. When you talk to young girls, do you talk about that? Hey, and I know you don't like to pump your own tire, but when you're mm-hmm. now an Olympic gold medalist, and people want to know, well, how did you and your sister get here? I mean, it's pretty, the hard work and the discipline. It's how do you not talk about that?
Yeah, I think that's for sure the bigger message we like to share. And I guess, you know, and you know our dad, he someone asked me if you can describe success. This is last week. If you can describe success, like, how do you describe it for yourself? And we're in an interview, we're wearing our medals, and I just said, I go, well, my dad, you know, from a young age, and we all kind of, we laugh about it, but in an endearing way, it's the face in the mirror speech. It's, you know, can you look yourself in the mirror after every single game and say, you know, I did what I could to the best of my ability, and I worked my hardest. And if you can say that to yourself, then, you know, you can be disappointed that you lost, but don't feel like you failed. And you know, that's all you can do is put your best foot forward every day and every opportunity that you get. And so the way I guess I measure success is not necessarily, you know, the gold medal, it's great, and it's something we've always dreamed of and worked so hard and tirelessly to make it happen. But ultimately, I guess when I think about what makes me happiest and most proud is just you know, the things that we were able to do last year and our fight with USA Hockey for equitable support and really changing the game for young girls coming up in the sport, but creating a better environment for young girls and young boys of equal opportunity and inclusion, and you think about those things and the things that really matter and will last well beyond our hockey careers. And those are the things that, you know, I can lay my head on my pillow at night and be proud of. And if you can do that and you can go to bed and, you know, not have, you know, a burden of what if, I think that's what success is.
Hard work and discipline. You know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's funny because the D word is not a popular word in culture. When you talk about being disciplined and things like that, you know, you get the eye roll and people are like, oh, you know, we want you to be happy. And I think the question that young people get asked most often is, how did that make you feel? Well, there's a certain amount of it that doesn't matter. It matters what you do. It matters how hard you work. It matters how disciplined you are if you want to be successful. So it's kind of an interesting cultural dichotomy that you live in, because most people that care about their feelings would never have gone down the path that you've gone down, because, you know, your feelings weren't, for a lot of years, have not been the number one thing on the agenda items. There's other things that are more important than simply your feelings.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, being at our level and trying to, I think being elite at anything, but especially trying to be an elite athlete, it's inherently selfish. You go through every day thinking, is this going to help me or hurt me? Whether that's, am I going to go out with friends? What am I going to eat? What time am I going to bed? What time am I waking up? It's just the day-to-day constant decisions you make are what's going to serve me better as an athlete. And, you know, when you get married, that your priorities change at the same time. Like, being an elite athlete is, that's my job. That's my priority. And so you go through different stages in life, but decisions become different, but also become, you know, I don't want to say harder, but you definitely feel bad with the people that are in your life, because, you know, my husband knows that, you know, last summer, I'm going to bed around 9 o'clock every day, no matter what. And I'm waking up early and
that's not
going out on a summer night.
That's a fun date.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not a fun date, and I know it, and I apologize for it, but it's just, it is what it is, and he knows what he signed up for. But, like, those are the things that I'm willing, those decisions you're easily willing to make, but it's not easy, always easy on the people that are with you, supporting you on the day-to-day. But I think, you know, that's ultimately why I married the man I did, and why we married the man she did, is because they get it, and they know what it means, and our parents have obviously been there every step of the way, and our brothers, you know, might give a shit, but they know what we're doing and they know what we're all about, and just kind of part of the package with us.
All right, I want to play the audio from your overtime goal. So your sister ties this thing up and sends the game. You guys go into overtime. Tell everybody, first of all, when you see the puck hit the net on Monique's goal, what do you think? What do you do?
Actually, I didn't see it live. So I had pinched one of their players off and the pass got made. And then I went for a change. My back was turned when she scored, so I was getting on the bench.
Right.
But I watched the replay and see that, you know, I see Monique coming through the line first, and it's just absolute chaos for like 5 seconds. And then you have to get yourself back to being focused and being neutral and not trying to get too high after a big moment in a game like that. But I think after she scored, it was like just mayhem on the bench. But then you got to be able to lock it back in pretty quick after that.
All right. Here's the audio of your goal. And then we'll first of all, set it up for us. Did you know, did you know what you were doing? Obviously, this is something that is choreographed that you work on. And had you ever shown this move to this goalie before?
I had never done this move on her before. I had kind of done it against Russia on the breakaway I had against Russia. I just went finished on my backhand.
Right.
But we had been doing quite a few shootouts in practice, and what had been working best for me were I was coming in really slow and just doing the Patrick Kane type thing, decandling quite a bit.
Explain that, the Patrick Kane thing.
So Patrick Kane, he normally comes in really slow and just he just handles the puck so much, and you're moving in so slow that the goalie kind of, they get almost stuck because they don't know what he's going to do. He's moving slow. He can shoot. He can pull up and shoot. He can kind of finish whichever way because he's not moving in fast either direction.
Right.
So I'd kind of been doing that in practice, and so I had the mindset that I was going to do that, and the two shooters before me had shot and both come right down the middle pretty quickly, and so I wanted to change the rhythm a bit. But once I got into the top of the circle, I just kind of went into autopilot and had I don't know what I was thinking. I practiced that move so many times, but it just felt like it was on autopilot, like that's this is what's going to happen naturally, and just glad it really worked out.
All right, so here's the audio from it.
We go round by round. Jocelyn Lamoureux. Two goals apiece in the shootout. Lamoureux moving in on Zabanas. She deeks and scores!
Oh, my gosh. That's electrifying. That's as good as you're going to see anywhere.
Great move, great hands, great deception, finding the hole right there. We saw her take a shootout earlier in this tournament, unable to capitalize, makes it count today.
Must beat Rooney to keep Canada's hopes alive. She is stuck! The United States wins gold in Pyeongchang!
I'm sure you could listen to that every day and never get tired of it.
Oh, yeah. Right now.
No, I'm sitting here watching it, smiling. The let's talk about. So you're on the bench watching. Did you know she was going to stop her? Because she looks like straight up, like solid. Not even struggling on that save to make a save.
No, she didn't bite at all. If you just watch her, it doesn't even look like there was a fake or a deke in there anywhere, and she just didn't bite on anything. And when she stopped, Maddie stopped pulling on the third shooter, and she just popped right up. She was smiling. She was just like, she was cool as a cucumber. Like, you could just see the confidence oozing from her. And I got back to the bench and gave a few pounds, and I went to the door. I stood right by the door, and I ended up throwing my stick behind the bench because I'm like, I'm not going to need this. Like, we're celebrating. Because, chances are that, you score a goal like that, you might get the nod to go again if they had scored. And I threw my stick. I knew Maddie was going to stop it.
That is awesome. What's the feeling like? All of a sudden, boom, you're a gold medalist. Lifelong dream, 20 years in the making. What's it feel?
It's unbelievable. I think, you try and describe that moment. So many people ask what it's like, and it's a moment in time that really just you wish could last so much longer than it does. And I had a flag from, I believe it was Holden had sent us a flag a few years ago. And so I had brought a flag. I had folded in my stall brought it to Florida and had been in my stall. And I brought it to Korea because I knew, like, there was just this belief that, we were going to find a way to get it done. And I wanted a flag to celebrate with, and to be able to, drape yourself in an American flag and just, see your parents, and it's unbelievable, to be honest. It's something that you're so proud to wear the red, white, and blue, and to see your flag go up and to sing your national anthem. It's something that, no one can take from us, but to be able to have an experience like that and share that with the important people in your life and share that with, Americans and people back home is pretty indescribable.
All right. So now it gets even, first of all, I thought it was hilarious, some of the stuff that got tweeted. I remember TJ Oshie, who went to the University of North Dakota. And for those of you who don't know, he plays for the Washington Capitals now, initially got drafted and played for the St. Louis Blues. But TJ Oshie has more sick moves. He and Patrick Kane, you talk about guys that are sick with the puck. I mean, but TJ Oshie combines this roller hockey shit that he learned as a kid, and he does crazy stuff. And they're tweeting like, oh my God, what was that? And then you get the whole Britney Spears thing going on. So this thing explodes, your goal explodes, because it is so sick. Talk about that, the whole Twitter storm that blows up. What was that like?
Well, it's funny because it basically, so just to explain the on-ice celebration, to give some background, it's you celebrate with your team, and then you have the medal ceremony on the ice.
Right.
And so it takes about 30 minutes to get that whole setup. So you bring out the bronze medalists, and they have these carpets going the length of the ice for the teams to stand on. So it's like it's a process and a production. We get our medals. And then Monique and I, again, we get pulled by someone from NBC to go do a live interview with Pierre McGuire. And Pierre had been incredible the entire tournament. He'd been finding Monique and I before games and just wishing us luck and just kind of singing his praises before games towards us. And so we go and do a interview with Pierre, and the oops, I did it again. It was all from that one interview that Pierre asked Monique about the goal, and Monique's like, actually, it has a name. It's called Oops, I Did It Again. And then from that point on, from that first interview, it kind of just took off. Just Monique is the one who kind of dropped the name on it, and it was just kind of funny because you get out of the media zone, which takes over an hour after you get your medals, and it's just from that, from one interview, it turned into every interview is asking about it. So it's pretty funny. And then the Twitter attention behind it, it's cool and it's special that so many people tuned into our game and were supporting. And if that can catch attention and bring attention to our sport and be a springboard for growing the game, then that's pretty cool.
All right. I think this is the interview. We'll see.
But you guys are double trouble. Jocelyn, I'll get to you in a second. Nick, this is really important. How many times have you seen Jocelyn do that move in the driveway?
Well, actually, the last 4 years, one of our coaches, Peter Elander, has worked on that move with us. It's called Oops, I Did It Again. So she did oops on against Russia, and then she did it again against Zabados there. So I've seen it a handful of times, and it usually works every time.
And it worked this time. So you guys are double.
How about that? That's the origin of it. Were you surprised all of a sudden Britney Spears is dropping your name in a tweet? What was that like?
I mean, it's funny. It's pretty cool that she acknowledged it. And for Moni, you know, Peter has been such a great mentor and coach for us, and you know, I'm pretty sure actually someone took a screenshot of his tweet right after the goal, because it's like legit. We didn't just make it up. Like, Peter named it, and he tweeted, "Oops, I did it again," right after the goal. And
that's awesome.
in a certain timeline that it for sure is like original and authentic. And so it's pretty special to be able to share something like that with Peter. And, you know, he's been so supportive and calling and checking in on us every tournament and worked with us for the last 4 years, just volunteering his time, on the ice with us. So it's pretty cool.
A couple more questions. I'll let you go. My guest today is, 2018 Olympic gold medalist Jocelyn Lameroux with the United States women's hockey team, scored the overtime game winner against the Canadians in the gold medal game. And she's been gracious enough to join us and give us her time for a little bit today. So what's next, Jocelyn? Much written about is you're going to start a family, something that you put off for a while. Do you still want to play in competitive hockey, and you know, in the next Olympics is 4 years down the road, but you guys normally take pretty good care of yourself. So what's the future hold?
I think Monique and I have been pretty outspoken about wanting to try to start families, and if we're fortunate and able to make that happen, in the near future, that's really what we're hoping for right away. But we're definitely, open and, I think want to keep playing. We don't want to commit, 100%, but we still have the passion to play. We believe and, prove that we can play at an elite level and still be, impact players on the team. And I guess if roles were reversed and, this is what our husbands were going through, it would kind of be no question. And so we just have a mindset that, if we want to have a family, great, but we shouldn't have to choose between wanting to have a family and continuing to pursue our passion. And if we still want to do it and feel like we can keep up and do our thing on the ice, I think we're definitely are open and probably want to try and do it all.
All right. Let me just, if it's a boy, Michael's a good name. It's strong. It's clean. If you look up the meaning of the name Michael, it says one who is like God. Nothing but high self-esteem associated with that name, okay? So you don't have to go the Pierre, the Pierre-Paul, the Jean-Philippe, any of that nonsense. So Michael Davidson, that's like a good name. So I just want to throw that out there.
I'll run it past Brent and see what he says.
Yeah, Brent, come on. That's kind of a weird name. You don't want to, look, there's kids like your brother Jacques waiting for your son or daughter at middle school. You do not want to tag them with a weird name, okay? All right? Because I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that to your kid. The final question before I let you go. Advice for parents. Sports are now, for young people that want to play, are almost a 12-month between and I'm just talking about kids that are playing high school sports around the country. There's the season. There's all the training that goes into it. There's the weight training. There's the off season programs. If you were going to give parents now a gold medalist advice on how do you either support somebody or help a child that may be interested, and not only I would say two things. Not only be interested, but also have the physical skill, because I remember having a conversation with my dad about was Pete Rose or Ted Williams right? Pete Rose said, good hitters are made, not born. And Ted Williams said, good hitters are born, not made. And so I was an above average baseball player. And so it was important to me who was right in that conversation. And I remember asking my dad, who do you think is right? And he looked at me and goes, Pete Rose is full of shit. He says that to sell his book and things like that. There's a minimum amount of talent that you have to be able to step on the field with guys that could play at the highest level competitively. So assuming that your child has not above average, but maybe elite level talent, and assuming that they have, the interest in it, what advice do you give parents?
I think, depending on how old they are, if you're talking at a young age, it's statistically proven that they should be playing multiple sports, and that in the long run is going to make them a better athlete. Growing up, Monique and I, and my brothers, but especially Monique and I, we played so many sports growing up. Like when the hockey season was over, we didn't play much hockey. The spring hockey that kids do now is absolutely crazy. And I think parents understanding that it's okay to say no, you're not slighting your kids' opportunities by doing that. You're not sacrificing what could be something great 10 years down the road. If they're 8 years old and don't play in a spring hockey tournament in, Vancouver, Toronto, it's going to be okay. But I think as they get older, I think the biggest thing is you definitely have to have, that certain level of just, given talent, but it's having that it factor, and you can't force it, and you got to make sure the kids are enjoying doing what they do. But getting in the weight room is important, and you don't need to go buy a sports-specific training package. Speed is speed, strength is strength, power is power, and how you demonstrate that on the athletic field is just different for each sport, but how you develop that physical attribute is almost always the same. So you don't need to go, train with a hockey-specific trainer. If you got a good strength coach, they're going to make you a better athlete. But it's definitely, our parents were so good at balancing each other out with our dad pushed us and in the right ways and, really challenged us to be better. But our mom was always, kind of the cheerleader and didn't know a ton about sports. She was just kind of there, so could never really talk specifics as far as hockey goes and probably still can't, but it's just always been there to support and just having that appropriate balance and not being too much and not being too little where it's acting like everything's fine, but trying to get the best out of, their skill set and their work ethic is the most important, I think.
That balance is hard because, you see, again, having four kids and you see some parents who lose their minds, and it's like you feel bad because you look at their kid and it's like their kid doesn't have the talent, to play at that elite level. And you're not even going to know till your kid goes through puberty and you see what, cards your kid gets dealt by puberty, and boy or girl, their bodies are going to change and they'll be physically defined by what happens. And you could be great when you're 6 or 7 or 8, but by the time you're 15, 16, 17, you're a different human being physically. And you can't govern a lot of that. There's some you can, but it's always kind of heartbreaking when you see, a parent who seems to be more enthusiastic about it. And you look at the kid and you're like, the little engine that could is a great story, but it doesn't always work that way in life, And it's sad when you see a kid that's trying so hard and they just can't get there. And I think parents ought to be mindful of that.
You start to lose the life lessons when it's, a forced endeavor to try and get your kid every opportunity under the sun when they maybe don't even want it themselves. Or if you're forcing something that's just not there and there could be something else that they're good at and they're just being pigeonholed into something that really isn't for them. But especially young girls, I find it so frustrating to see parents who have young girls and boys and they'll sign their boy up for whatever it is and it costs whatever, but they won't sign their girl up for the same thing. And I just find that so irritating because it's proven that, especially for girls that participate in sports growing up, especially at the high school level, they grow up into successful adults and they learn how to work in a team setting and accountability and discipline. And those lessons are what ultimately serves people in life well beyond sport, no matter how far you go. And that's ultimately, there's such a small percentage of athletes who make it at an elite level that to lose the lessons along the way is, I think too bad because that's where kind of sports are right now in the U.S. And I think we got to get back to the fundamentals.
She's an Olympic gold medalist. It is. I'll tell you what, I smile every time I hear this music now, and I smile when I say that. And Jocelyn, I sent you a Monika text about it. I think that when you've gone around the world and you've worn the flag and you fought for it, the Olympics have a little bit different meaning. And the way you all represented the country, your fight last year with USA Hockey, the way you represented yourselves, your family, and the community of Grand Forks, North Dakota, where you grew up, is all great. But seeing you all be rewarded with all that hard work, both you and Monique, your sister, playing such key roles for the women's Olympic hockey team was something that we all knew would happen someday. You might not have, but we all did because we've seen your hard work and your combativeness and all the success that has come through those the character that you and your sister show. From everybody who listens to All Marine Radio who's been screaming at me for the last month or so to get those get those damn girls on. We want to hear from them. Thank you very much for doing this today. And a tremendously heartfelt congratulations on being an Olympic gold medalist.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. And thank you to all your supporters. It's pretty cool to hear.
No, that is Jocelyn Lamoureux. More on All Marine Radio coming up next.